There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Friday Eve, Thursday edition of the show. Speaking of which, coming up in hour number two, Dale Leash from Landnap will join us like he does usually on Tuesdays. And a heads up, too. I know we're going to talk about this probably more tomorrow. We talked about it a little bit with Dr. Sean Powers yesterday. But the kids, the youths, and Bobby and I talked about it this morning, the Roy Barton Young Anglers Tournament happening down at the rodeo site this Saturday. So in, you know, a day and a half from now, get the kids out to go fishing. Any other questions about that? I can probably answer those on the text line, which is at 343-0106, 343-0106 for a phone call or a text. If you got a question, you can get it through on that, because it is, it's good to have this man on. It's sad that this will be the last time I talk to him in his position. I think the last time I talked to him in his position that he holds currently, but there's a lot of stuff in the future for Mobile, Baldwin County Sheriff Hoss Mack joining us now on Midday Mobile. Thanks for your time, Sheriff.
Yes, sir.
I was, and when this came out, and I know, because I want to hear from you how long you've been thinking about this, but I was, it seemed abrupt to me, right? Because I obviously hadn't been in your orbit. And when I heard this the other day, I said, oh my gosh, what? He's a young guy, you know, he's retiring from the sheriff's office. But then I started looking how long you've been working in the sheriff's department. You've been there a while.
Yeah, Sean, I began my career in law enforcement in 1985 in Mobile with the Alabama Department of Forensic Sciences. And then in 1989, I came to work with the sheriff's office. And then in 2006, I ran for sheriff. And, of course, I'm in my fifth term. So I got to work in it at an early age. I came to work in law enforcement actually at 20 years of age. So I'll be 60 this year. So it's been a little while, but it has flown by.
Okay, I want to pick this up. So it's 1989, and you're a deputy sheriff there in Baldwin County. Think about y'all just, I'm picturing Baldwin County in 1989, which is still a big difference from 79, but 1989 to 2024, there's probably not, I don't know, in the state of Alabama or outside the state of Alabama, a lot of counties that have seen that growth. And here you are, the chief law enforcement officer over that county. Tell me what that was like.
Well, as you know, we've gained several municipalities that have incorporated since 1989. Our population has just about tripled during that time. Our transient population, which is our visitors, vacationers, and people that live here several months out of the year, has all of those have grown. I've told other sheriffs when I talk to them, I envy a sheriff's office that is not in a constant state of change. And that's what we've been since I came to work with the sheriff's office, but particularly since I've been sheriff. So, you know, we're dealing with a lot more people, a lot more traffic, a lot more situations, and, of course, the different things that we've had to address over the past few years. So, and we're continuing to grow again. You know, we have the jail project going on up in Bay Minette right now. We're hoping to finish that project probably mid-year next year. So there's always you got to, at the top of our list every year is how we're going to address the growth.
Yeah, and that's something that you have to, I'm guessing, and you could, that you have to catch up with, right? You can't go, do you, with a, as a sheriff and go, listen, y'all, the projection on population growth in our county is this in the next 3 years, so I need to get deputies staffed at this level to be ready for it? Or is it, you meet the belt's too tight you know, because you've had to, you know, got this growth and now you have to add extra deputies. I mean, is it cart or horse? Which is in front?
Well, we use a lot of avenues of information to kind of help us with our projections. For instance, we look at the school system of how many new students are being enrolled. We work with the Baldwin County Realtors Association. We work with the Baldwin County Economic Alliance. We work with all the Chamber of Commerce's, and even to the point of working with our two large utility companies in Baldwin County. So historically, you can look at those and kind of get an aggregate number, if you will. Right now, I think most people will agree we're probably growing right now between 6,000 to 7,000 people per year.
Wow.
One of the biggest things, however, though, is, you know, while there's still substantial growth within the municipalities, of course, we have 14 municipalities, but now a lot of the population is moving out into the rural areas. There's a lot of development that's going in the rural areas, and, of course, that's the primary focus of the sheriff's office, even though we do a lot of things in our cities and towns as well. But the rural areas are our primary responsibility.
It is, though, you know, I talk about this with Sheriff Birch, you, that people say, well, I saw, you know, the sheriff's department's inside some city, and I always think about it like, what is it, those GIS maps. I mean, while municipalities do the work once they're incorporated, y'all still are responsible for everything that's Baldwin County, right?
That is correct. And, you know, particularly we have, you know, we have 12 police departments. Five of our police departments in Baldwin County are what we would call relatively small departments, which means they may not have full-time investigators, may not have, you know, people that have a lot of experience. So we get called in to a lot of these municipalities to assist with case investigations. Over the past year, we've actually been called into three of our municipalities to help out because they had manpower shortages. They did not have sufficient personnel to provide 24-hour service to their cities. So we came in and we, you know, helped them out and continue to do so when those type situations arise.
Think about the, and I don't know if this is written down, but the kind of calls that, you know, what y'all got the most kind of calls for in 1989 versus 2024. Is that has there been a change? I mean, is it more of a, you know, rural calls back then to municipal adjacent calls now, or do y'all track that stuff?
We do. And you know why? You know, we can always talk about the drug problem, the drug mm-hmm. epidemic. Drugs have always been a huge issue with any law enforcement agency. But, you know, with Baldwin County, we have seen an increase property related crime, and that's just simply related to the fact there's more people here. You're talking 265,000 that may be in the county today versus all the way back then when it was 85,000. So you're looking at the total difference that you have there. We did have this past year of great concern was we had almost triple the number of drug overdoses, and 90% of those were attributed to fentanyl. So I can remember the day when, you know, when we transitioned, it was crack cocaine, and then it went from crack cocaine to methamphetamine. Then heroin kind of started popping back up on the streets a few years ago simply because it was so cheap. And now we're transitioning over to fentanyl, and then fentanyl's being mixed with all the other drugs as well. And so, you know, we have seen those type changes, you know, over those past years.
Yeah, think about the drug side of it. Also, I was thinking about also the mental health. I remember, you know, this has been an issue for Mobile County when, I guess, the first term of Governor Bentley, I think I'm right, maybe second term, where the state changed how it was doing, you know, housing people with mental illness. There's a lot of people that went right back into the communities, and all of a sudden I watched law enforcement at municipal level and sheriff's departments having to, like, do a new job, right? I mean, be in the mental health department, which is not what y'all are trained for.
Right. No, the Alabama sheriffs, we operate the largest mental health facilities in the state. Unfortunately, that is in the county jail.
Yeah.
And so we have had to develop a lot of programs. I know in our sheriff's office, just within the past 2 years, we have stood up three different partnerships with our partners such as Alta Point, East Point, the Baldwin County Mental Health, working with different things, trying to address. You know, we never wanted to be in a position of a treatment facility because it's very hard to actually treat someone in a correctional facility for mental illness because of the environment. But we do want to try to do what we can do to assess, refer, follow up, and try to do those things. So just in the past, as I said, the past 2 years, we had to initiate three different programs, two of which are strictly within the correction center, and one of which is an outpatient referral program that we dealt with. And so mental health has really become a big issue because we are so far behind on commitment beds, full-time beds in the state of Alabama. So the majority of people that are going through a mental health issue trying to get treated or being treated as outpatient, and that just kind of lends itself sometimes to the number of those people that get in crises and, you know, have to be referred or have to be dealt with by law enforcement.
So if, like, in 1989, the training your deputies are getting now and have been on dealing with that was not exactly part of the protocol in 1989, I can imagine.
No, I mean, you know, when I went through police academy in 1985, my police academy was 7 weeks long. Now the most police academies now are 14 weeks long, and they have all these components. You know, Alabama passed a law just in the past session where every police officer now has to undergo sensitivity training as it relates to autism. Autism mm-hmm. has become a big issue, and so that's something, once again, that's new. And so the training aspect just continues to grow and to grow and to grow to meet with all these different circumstances, you know, that we're having to deal with.
Just joining us, talking to Baldwin County Sheriff Hoss Mack. From the text line here, Sheriff, this texter said, illegal immigrants, dealing with illegal immigrants and crime in Baldwin County, how that has exploded, the texter asking.
Yeah, you know, most recently, I think, might be referring to the latest arrest of the DUI manslaughter charge of the person that was driving the car where the six-year-old child died. And, you know, we definitely see an increase of what we believe to be undocumented and illegal aliens. Unfortunately, there's very little that we can do about that at the local level. The federal government is the one that controls those things and enforces those things because they have nationwide jurisdiction, and these people typically flow from another country and then state to state. So one of the things, our facility, we actually are a ICE temporary detention facility where if an illegal is arrested for a crime and they're brought to us within 72 hours, they have to be evaluated as to their status. But what we've seen most of the time, none of these people are being deported. They are given an actual court date to go before an immigration judge to see what their current status is. And right now, they're setting those dates 3 and 4 years out. So when that person gets out of jail and gets that paperwork and they have to go to an immigration judge, which in our area is in New Orleans, a majority of those people don't go. And an overwhelmingly majority of people don't go. And so that's where some of our problem is. But we have seen a definite increase in Baldwin County. I think one of the things that I would project is when we get the 2030 census, when it comes out, you're going to see that the Hispanic population in Baldwin County will be our largest minority.
And this is, and so it really, I mean, it's going to show it, but it currently is in your approximation.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And before we go to the news here and come back, I question here about, it says, has he named a successor? I know you have named the person, even though it's up to the governor. Talk us through this.
Sure, real quick. So what we call the old law, which had been in effect since 1901, was that if the sheriff vacated his office, the coroner became the acting sheriff until the governor made an appointment. Well, because of all the specific training in law enforcement now that you've got to have and all the different requirements, the Alabama legislature a couple years ago passed the new law that said that the highest ranking member of the sheriff's office would become the acting sheriff if the office was vacated. And the governor has two choices. Either the governor can just allow that to stay in place, or the governor can actually make an appointment for the remainder of my term, which would end in January of 2027. So because of the way the law is and because of consistency with our office and all the projects we're in, I am recommending to the governor that she consider appointing my chief deputy, Anthony Lowry, to that position, which would allow us to have a person in place to finish the jail project, keep consistency going on as we go into this before the next election, which will be in 2026.
All right, coming right back with Sheriff Hoss Mack. We're going to talk about what's next for, at that point, he'll be, I don't know if he'll still be, he'll be part of the Sheriff's Association. Listen, we'll have the sheriff explain it when we return right here on Midday Mobile.
Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
1223, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Thursday, and having a conversation with Sheriff Hoss Mack, Sheriff of Baldwin County, and we'll transition here to what's next, and your move to your new job. You're not going to, I mean, you know, you're not going to just sit in the easy chair and take it easy here, Hoss. You're going to do something else.
Yeah, you know, Sean, this actually began a process, I want to say, probably about 3 years ago. We had an executive director for the Alabama Sheriff Association for 47 years. His name was Bobby Timmons. Bobby was kind of a legend in Montgomery. He had been a deputy sheriff in Jefferson County and then was elected to the Alabama House of Representatives. And the first director that they had of ASA had retired, and so Sheriff Mel Bailey was the sheriff of Jefferson County, and he encouraged Bobby to take that as a temporary position. So we always joked that he served in that temporary position for 47 years. So when Bobby was going to retire, and he and I were very close, Bobby came to me and he said, "You need to take this job." And I said, "I'm just not ready. It just wasn't the right time." So I actually participated, and we hired another director that came to work with us for a short period of time. And then he decided to move on. And so it came up again when this came about. And through a lot of prayer, family consultation and everything, I just saw it as an opportunity that I can help out the 67 sheriffs of the state of Alabama and do some good things, maybe try to do a few things a little bit differently. But bring a breath of fresh air into the association and build some great relationships with our legislature, with the Alabama County Commission Association, with our executive branch of the government, Attorney General's Office, Governor, things of that nature that we're going to be able to do. So it was an opportunity that presented itself again. And I just felt like it was probably the time to go ahead and make that move.
I think what you just listed is good for people to hear. That what sheriffs, the links, because you have, I mean, sheriff of county, so you obviously the county commission is a big deal. At the same time, laws are passed in Montgomery through the legislature that affect a sheriff's position or the county, and then the execution of those through the executive branch and the judicial with the, you know, the AG's office in Aaliyah. I mean, all those are part of the world of a sheriff.
That's correct, and that's one of the things that makes a sheriff's office more unique than any law enforcement. With all due respect to municipalities and our state agencies, but the sheriffs are the officers of the court. And so all of your court actions that come down are going down through your sheriff's offices, which those includes everything from warrants to subpoenas to garnishments to evictions to all kinds of different things are all channeled through the sheriff's offices. And then once again, as you said, it's usually in each county, the sheriff's office is usually the largest law enforcement agency. And so they're the ones that are providing assistance and working with our local municipalities. And we just want to make sure that we capitalize on those relationships and make sure that we continue to build that. We've got very diverse sheriffs. We've got one sheriff's office in the state that I think has 8 deputies. And then you've got the largest sheriff's office in the state is Jefferson County. And they're currently a substantial amount of number of deputies down. So we've always had memorandums of understanding with all of our sheriffs across the state, and we help each other out. I've sent deputies to other counties to help out. Same thing has happened here in times of hurricanes and things of that nature. But we just want to make sure we're building that relationship, building that positive image with all of our partners and everything so that we can make sure that our citizens are getting the best service possible by their sheriff's offices.
As you leave this office next month to the new job, thing you're proudest of from your time as a deputy sheriff, but your five terms as sheriff of Baldwin County, is one thing stand out?
I think it's our children's programs. That's one of the things. I mean, I could list, we've grown in every division. We actually now have 22 divisions in the sheriff's office, which I never would have thought. I think when I came to work with the sheriff's office, there may have been eight or nine. But, you know, our SRO program, obviously, that has been a flagship for us. Being able to put a sworn deputy sheriff or police officer in every public school in Baldwin County. Some schools have as many as three or four. Our Camp Shining Star that we do, which is a youth children's camp during the summer. The different programs is that. And then I would probably say next to that is the fact of just keeping up with the general growth of what we've had. I've got people that serve in the sheriff's office that have all kinds of national certifications. They're recognized as experts in their field. And so, but that comes because we had to. We had to address the growth. We had to address what we were doing. So I think it's what we've been able to do with children and the youth in our county, and then the way that we've been able to keep up with the growth.
That is the keeping up with the growth. I can imagine when you're in your new position, any county that says, hey, you don't understand, we're growing in our county, you'll be able to go, okay, let me tell you a little something about growth. Here's how you deal with it. Well, Sheriff, I appreciate that. And if we don't talk before, next time we'll talk, we'll be talking about what's going on with the Sheriff's Association.
That sounds very good. Thank you so much for having me today.
Hey, my pleasure. There he goes, Baldwin County Sheriff Hoss Mack, going to go take a new job as head of the Sheriff's Association for the 67 counties in Alabama that you hear me reference a lot, usually during legislative session, right? We're talking about different bills that are moving and where the Sheriff's Association is on those bills. So we'll be reaching out to Sheriff Mack at that point going forward. All right, get your calls and texts when we come back at 343-0106. Plus, we mentioned this now, but we'll talk about it in detail with Dale Leash from Landyap after 1 o'clock. As the head of MHA, the CEO of the Mobile Housing Authority, accuses city officials of coordinating a smear campaign against him. And so the worm turns for the city of Mobile, doesn't it? We'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 12:36, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Thinking about, I've got an e-bike. Maybe you heard my Magnum. The brand is Magnum. The model I have is a Scout that I got from my buddy Clint Jameson a couple of years ago at Adventure Earth Bicycles. Been riding it, loving it. But mine is it's got the regular top bar. Like it looks like it's beefier than a regular bicycle because the e-bike is, it's got the bigger tires because mine's an off-road version. But I did look at the step-throughs the other day, and I'm not ready for it yet, so do not type the mean text yet. But maybe in the next 10 years or so, the step-throughs will be right for me. Have you seen those? So the 75 e-bikes in stock at any time at my buddy Clint Jameson's place, Adventure Earth Bicycles, right there, kind of catty-cornered across from Ruth's Chris. The selection's got the top-rail normal bikes that look like a normal bike, look like a man's bike, right? And I like mine. But I'm thinking, another 10 years or so, would those step-throughs be right for me? And I'm looking at them, and there's a big selection of step-throughs. So they still have the same battery charge, power, the distance they can go and all that. But you don't have to swing your leg as high to get on the horse there. You can step through. It's like Denago and a couple of these models out there have the step-through feature on them. So it's something to check out if you think, I've been thinking about this e-bike. Sean's been talking about these e-bikes, but I don't know if I want to, be climbing back on the bike. They got them, you step right through. And they're pretty slick. So with 75 in stock at any time, there's one that's right for you or maybe several that are right for you in the e-bike world. In addition to any of the accessories you need for those e-bikes, they got them. And your e-bikes, non-e-bikes, he's got a bunch of non-e-bikes, 400 of those in stock. You can get tuned up. Go in there and get your current bike tuned up and get all the work done on it. And if you buy a bike from Adventure Earth Bicycles, quarterly. You can take your bike by, and they will do for free. Make sure your brakes are properly lined and working. The brake pads are set correctly. Make sure the shifters are working. All the gears are lubed and properly working. Check the air pressure in the tires, everything. So it would be kind of a fun family thing, too. Get all your bikes and go down there on a Saturday or something and get the tune-ups done on them. It's my friend Clint Jamison, Adventure Earth Bicycles. Huge selection of bikes, whether they're e-bikes or non-e-bikes. They're at the corner of Little Flower and Airport in Midtown. They're online at adventure-earth.com. Go see them today. All right, to the story here that I just mentioned this, and we'll talk about this at length with Dale Leash coming up after 1 o'clock, but this just up at LandyetMobile.com said less than 24 hours, because you heard Dan and Dalton this morning talking about the purchase of the MHA property for the airport, and that's something that that Chris Curry and I had talked about a couple different times. He's with the Mobile Airport Authority. So they talked about that purchase of land there north of I-10 next to the Brooklyn, the international airport there. And here's a story that came out from Dale and Brady Petrie, both from LandYap. Said less than 24 hours after announcing the sale of 272 acres for future construction of the new international airport, Mobile Housing Authority CEO Michael Pierce has released a scathing letter accusing city officials of coordinating a smear campaign against him and board members in an attempt to oust them from their positions. In a 7-page letter addressed to MHA commissioners, so Mobile Housing Authority commissioners, and sent to media outlets and city officials on Thursday, this morning, Pierce claims that he has been the target of a deliberate negative portrayal by local leaders who are attempting to fire him as CEO. Says for the last 2 of 3 years, Pierce claims city officials have been conspiring with two of MHA's biggest critics, Laurie Hunter and Estella Trotter, to paint a disparaging image of both he and MHA as a whole. Over the past several months, both Hunter and Trotter have addressed city councilors multiple times regarding their concerns about the state of low-income housing throughout the Port City. Okay, so, and like I said, we'll delve into this deeper with Dale coming up in just a little bit. But it's this. There are two things going on, right? You have this land sale going on from MHA to MAA. How about some acronyms here? I didn't know that was the sale was it forced? I don't know, because you have the CEO saying there was a smear campaign directed against them and disparaging MHA as a whole. Now, Mobile Housing Authority has had issues in the past, too, right? These have been discussed. It's not the first time this has been up, so we will get some more detail from Dale coming up. And speaking of LandYap stories, gosh, I've held on to this story all week, but I want to get time now to get to this. And I said yesterday, this story actually is near and dear to us, because I think we were probably one of the people that were affected by this guy, because I think the mailboxes, one of the sets of mailboxes in questions are the ones that are adjacent to the opulent and gilded FM Talk 106.5 studios. So the story is a federal judge sentences a man who stole mail with rat traps to 36 months. It's from Scott Johnson over at LandYap. Said a federal judge has handed down a 36-month sentence for a Mobile man indicted for cashing out thousands of fraudulent checks. Prosecutors say the suspect obtained the checks by fishing them out of mail drop-off boxes with rat traps. Brilliant. Like the old Guinness said, brilliant. Criminal, but brilliant. Because, you know, you open the little... you go to the blue can there, the box, the metal thing, you open it up and there'd be, it's made so you can reach your hand down there, right? Well, here's how this goes. It says, according to court records, on July 2nd, Senior U.S. District Judge William Steele announced that Jonathan Taylor Randall, 32 of Mobile, to 3 years in prison, 5 years of supervised release, and ordered him to repay $33,042 in restitution for defrauding multiple Gulf Coast banks and credit unions in using checks and personal information prosecutors say were stolen from regional U.S. Postal Service blue collection boxes. Says his sentencing follows a string of judgments handed down by local federal court over the past 2 years as USPS and local law enforcement have joined forces to combat the epidemic of check fraud that has escalated nationwide since the COVID-19 pandemic. Mail theft in the area became so prevalent during the 2023 holiday season, the U.S. Postal Service officials simply removed blue collection boxes from several Mobile County municipalities. The ones here, I think, they wrapped them. Here, Dalton, you can write. They did something. They made it like, don't use this box. The ones right here at the station. And so you're wondering how this was going. And there were more than just this guy. There are several people they busted on this. And the conversation I had off the record with somebody had told me that a lot of the people that were in this check theft were in the drug game before, and maybe that enforcement got too tough or whatever, you know, like the whack-a-mole game, or there's easier money to be made because the money in checks flying around COVID, that these people moved into the business of stealing mail. That was that's not part of the story. It's just something I was told off the record. It said, last month, U.S. District Judge Moore sentenced 8 people in a check washing and mail theft scheme. Some cases have featured charges against former USPS employees who were accused of aiding in the schemes. That was the key, right? Giving the key to the people to be able to open the mailbox. But in this case that we're just talking about, this case with Jonathan Taylor Randall from this week, here's how it was done. The rat trap. It said, all right, beginning in February and March of 2023, agents with the U.S. Postal Service USPS Inspection Service began investigating complaints about individuals phishing mail from blue U.S. coastal collection boxes in Mobile and Mississippi Gulf Coast. According to the court documents, phishing includes using long, flexible objects like a coat hanger to lower adhesive materials onto mail collection boxes to pick up items. I think when most of us read that headline earlier this week, we're like a real rat trap, like they had to set the rat trap, you know, and then drop it down there and it snapped on the mail. But no, it said it's like the sticky traps. Agents were alerted to a phishing attempt on March 24th by a postmaster in Escatawpa, Mississippi, who found a rat trap stuck to a tub inside a local blue collection box. Postal investigators collected the rat trap and sent it to forensic analysis up in Dulles, Virginia. Now, think about this. So they collect this rat trap in Escatawpa. They send it up to the forensic analysis in Dulles, Virginia. They identified 5 fingerprints on the sticky trap, belonging to Randall, this person they just sentenced. Said on March 28th and April 4th, a Crichton of 2023, a Crichton post office employee reported more rat traps inside blue collection boxes. According to prosecutors, they were able to, USPIS was able to confirm Randall's fingerprints on those traps as well. So he's smart enough to come up with this thing using the sticky rat traps, but not, I guess, to wear gloves when he did it. And they said agents surveilling Randall's residence on May 1st of 2023 and May 10th of 2023, they opened a garbage can left at the end of his driveway. There they found bags full of what prosecutors say was stolen mail, including bill payments and checks sent from the D'Iberville, Mississippi area. The next day, May 11th, agents executed a federal search warrant. They found hundreds of checks and stolen mail and a fake Illinois identity. Various checks had been altered and deposited, and a notebook containing stolen identities. And then it goes on, confiscated all the stuff. But yes, so did you have, I think we were definitely one of them around here that had mail that didn't make it. Like, you know, from the business account here, didn't make it. And then there were attempts to use our checks that were washed to go, to go to a bank. So, I mean, I think that I might be looking at the person that got us here. I'm guessing. But yeah, how about that? They would lower a sticky rat trap into the mailbox with, like, I guess, you know, this metal arm on it, this coat hanger kind of thing. And I guess it's a version of like the crane game. You remember the old crane game? You lower it down, try to win the prizes there you go down there with the bucket and try to grab the buck knife, but you end up not getting it. But it was doing that with these sticky things and getting the checks out and then washing these checks. Because these checks are official, right? They have the seal and all that stuff on it, but they wash the who's getting paid on it and make it themselves. So there you go. I just thought that story was pretty interesting. I think it probably affected a few people in our area. So I thought it was worth rolling out. All right, coming right back, more of Midday Mobile. Phone number, text line 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
1252 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile Thursday style. It gets the text here, but you see the story over on our Facebook page, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5. The brilliant Leanna running things over there. And this story, like if you grew up when I grew up in the 80s, you would have had to, I didn't watch a ton of television, but it would be hard to have avoided the show ALF. Alien life form, ALF. Remember, like, yeah. So the story here says, this is from WKRG, Benji Gregory, former child actor who played Brian Tanner on all four seasons of ALF, was found dead in his car last month, his sister revealed on Facebook. Now, as you look at where you, and this is a sad story, but as you look at where you rank in celebrity, when the word of your passing comes from a post your sister made on Facebook, it's been some time since he had a career, but how he died, this is the, okay. So here's the post. So Benji Gregory's sister said, it's with a heavy heart. My family has suffered a loss way too early. Benji Gregory was a great son, brother, and uncle. He was fun to be around, made us laugh quite often. Still going through his things, I find myself laughing at little videos or notes in between crying. And it goes on to say in the Facebook post that her brother, Benji Gregory, the guy that played Brian Tanner, the kid that played Brian Tanner on ALF, died of vehicular heat stroke alongside his service dog. And I don't know what the service dog was there. I don't know what his issue that required a service dog, so I do not know. But he died of the, like, did he leave him? I don't know. Some of these stories, they don't give you enough information. Leaves me asking questions here. We'll dig around. Like, that's what happens to children and pets and that are not ambulatory, right? So, but he, vehicular heat stroke. I guess you left in the car. The Maricopa County Medical Examiner's Office says that his cause of death is still pending, but the sister said vehicular heat stroke. The guy was in, it lists here that Gregory was not only in ALF, but he was in the A-Team. I don't remember. You talk about, let's go through the list of 80s shows here. He was in A-Team, T.J. Hooker, Punky Brewster, and ALF. If you had to do the Mount Rushmore of 80s family shows or whatever, you just listed, well, maybe not. I thought A-Team was pretty cool. A-Team, T.J. Hooker, Punky Brewster, and ALF. Yeah, that would be the Mount Rushmore of 80s TV shows. So there it is. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know where the, I tell you, this is of interest, and Leanna maybe knows more about the vehicular heat stroke for a grown-up. Seems quite odd. All right. Paul says, no one says Mobile better than Sean, or Paul likes to call me Shane. Okay, well, it's my town, man. It's my city. Let's see. Yeah, so Maxima said, did you see some vending machines in T-Town and Pell City now sell ammo? Pretty neat. Yeah. If you saw the stories about a Maxima that came out, though, they were just used to say, like the one from CBS 42 I read yesterday was like, well, the ammo's for sale. By the way, X number of people killed over the Independence Day weekend. Trying to link the two together. I don't know. I mean, it says the system works this way. You go up and it has like a facial ID and recognition to scan if you know who you are. I have to dig into that more because anything that's some kind of system like that, I imagine you can get around it. But it is interesting. Maximus also said yesterday that they're selling the ammo there. And when I go, if I ever do buy ammo, probably don't, but you go to some of the box stores to buy ammunition. When they carry the ammunition up to the front with you, like they're carrying some nitroglyceride or something like that, you know, it's okay. It's not going to get you. It's just, it's in the box. It's fine. They're like, I'm here to bring the ammo up. It's like, okay, I can carry it myself. I'm good. Adam says the main post office downtown is the one we use. We had numerous checks that were made out to us that were stolen and cashed. I don't know what the total was, but it was tens of thousands of dollars. We saw some of the checks afterwards that the alterations were so professionally done that you could not tell it wasn't authentic. The blue boxes are gone now. We don't know what the outcome was, but I know that the FBI was involved and it hadn't happened again. Adam, I know that feds were involved as well, and kind of what happened out here by our place. But they were doing, I don't think we ever got to see, and I can check with Tina in the back. She could probably tell me, but I never did see the checks, but we had stuff go missing. And we had the flip side, too. You know, when mail started getting so funky, we had people sending invoices to us here at the station, and they sent them. And, like, we didn't receive them. Months and months went by, and then all of a sudden we would get a flood of mail, stuff that had been sent 6 months before. You would get in a they would walk in here with a box of mail, and some of the stuff was from 2 days before, normal mail time to get to you, and some stuff was, like, 4 months earlier sent. It was a weird time. And then having the flip side of having checks going out, getting pilfered out of those boxes. But they've made some arrests here. But the interesting thing, too, that people told me, people had told me, is that the a lot of the people they were busting in these mail scams, getting these checks out, had records for selling drugs in the past, and they just kind of shifted to a new business. Maybe it was more lucrative. All right, Dale Leish from Land Yap joins us. Lots to talk about with him when we come back.